The sun bore down relentlessly, the heat seeming to settle around their feet and work up their ankles in tendrils that grabbed at them and sucked them down, each step sapping their strength. Tilly stared up at the sky, squinting and covering her eyes as she looked toward the sun, trying to determine its position and so work out how much longer they had until the cooling balm of the night. She turned and shook her head at Mick, who was giving her a quizzical stare. The burning red orb was still almost centered in the sky, and although it was past the midway point of the day, there were still many soul-destroying hours of heat to go before the night would descend. Lonnie led, with Tilly and Mick at point, Danny sticking to the middle with the three companions. As they walked, using as few words as possible to conserve energy and not run their throats ragged in the dry heat, Danny and Dean filled in Doc and Jack on the details of their part of the mission. Dean confessed that he was surprised to find the others waiting at the rendezvous when he and Danny had returned. They'd only spent a few hours in the Ville, and the rendezvous time was set for the next morning.
"Didn't even know if you were alive, but even so, didn't expect to see you waiting."
"Things triple fast when pressure."
"I must confess, I hadn't expected us to achieve our objective so quickly. When we left the bar, it was a tad precarious whether the sec would get us. And if not they, then certainly those drunks and jolt fiends who were gathered on the sidewalk outside. Fortunately, there was enough smoke and covering fire from within to confuse them. So when we stumbled out in the midst of a number of customers who were placing discretion over valor, then there was enough of a general melee for us to achieve safety. I fear the bartender may, however, have departed this realm. In the safety of a side alley, possibly the very one you had used scant seconds before, though that is mere supposition on my part, we were able to regroup, and Mick and Tilly were able to calm Lonnie. It would seem, although I can claim no certainty of this, that the bartender was one of those responsible for him falling foul of the Baron and thus being exiled. I fear he wanted to settle that old score before we began our mission. However, that notwithstanding, once we were out of immediate danger, he managed to regain his composure and outline a plan of wreck that we could follow. It would appear that he had allotted a whole day to the Enterprise simply in case we should find ourselves having to wait for a window in which to carry out the mission. Jack and I, of course, expressed our concern about your good self and young Danny, but Lonnie rightly pointed out that your fate was uncertain. But you knew the rendezvous point, and the rest was up to you. There was little to do but concur. We headed off to the area where the convoy was being prepared. It was in an area of the Ville that was not so heavily populated, and it would seem to me that it was an old sports arena that was being used to house the wags. Even from some distance, you could hear the noise of engines being tuned and maintained by grease-laden mechanics, and the smell of wag fuel became almost overpowering within a block of the arena itself. I was struck by the sparseness of the sec guard that was being mounted. We were obviously strangers to the area, and yet we encountered only the barest minimum of sec patrols, and as the area was largely deserted, it was a simple task to find cover, either in a building or a side alley. I would hazard a guess that the good Baron is either complacent through lack of outside threat, or is pouring all his resources into the convoy and its preparation, and merely hoping that no one will threaten him in the meanwhile. Whatever his view, it was simple for us to approach the arena. Gaining access to the area where the wags were being prepared was, however, another matter. The arena is not large, but it does have a central stand that is still intact, and a building that housed the box office once upon a time. I should imagine it was a baseball stadium rather than football. And I confess, my mind did drift back to the golden days when the boys would step out on the manicured diamond, the determined batter at the plate, staring down the crafty pitcher who would conceal the secrets of his legerdemain behind the web of his glove. A war of wits between two men, the fielders poised.
"Doc, stop. Tell story."
For a moment, Doc looked blankly at Jack, as though the albino hunter had interrupted a dream from which he didn't wish to emerge.
Of course. We had no way of knowing if there were any sec posted at the windows of the block, keeping a lookout. It did not seem likely, given the lack of force we had so far encountered, but nonetheless it was necessary to proceed with caution. Jack volunteered to take the role of decoy and set out to draw any fire as he headed for the side of the arena at an angle, using what little cover there was. I fear that, even given our friend's skills, it would have been difficult for him to escape injury if there had been anyone on guard. But, quite amazingly, he attained his objective without drawing a single blaster shot. It would seem that any sect was concentrated on the interior of the arena. We hurried out to the front of the arena, where Jack joined us, and it was a simple task to gain entry without being seen. Inside the arena, on the space that would once have been occupied by the grassy field of play, there was a sea of churned up and rutted mud and dust, the mud no doubt caused by spillages of water and wag fuel used by the mechanics. And this is where it becomes a matter of some concern to us. There are 12 wags in the charity convoy, one of which looks large enough to convey the women that are to be the prize for Summerfield. There is another armored wag that will carry the jack. Of the others, 4 are for the transfer and safe return to charity of the crops and supplies that Baron Al is purchasing. The others are sec wags, and they are a formidable sight. 6 wags, all of them armored and reinforced, with the addition of metal shielding and wire mesh across the windows to make it hard for any grens to be thrown into them. They are mounted internally with a variety of machine blasters, and 2 appear to have rocket launchers also fitted. They were covered with a swarm of filthy, sweat-begrimed mechanics who are working flat out to prepare them. There was a heavy sec presence in the arena, but such is the work rate being demanded of the mechanics that the sec men were being pressed into action to help mount blasters and carry cans of fuel and boxes of ammo to and from the central stores, which seemed to be located under the main stand. It did cross my mind that to knock out this stand would be to cripple their operation, but I was vetoed by Lonnie on this notion. I fear that only a head-to-head confrontation would be sufficient for the Hellbenders to achieve satisfaction, no matter how else the result could be achieved. We were able to secret ourselves around the arena and make note of observations. It is such chaos, as they struggle to meet the deadline imposed on them, that our effort in the firefight to come may be aided by their inability to ensure the full working order of every wagon blaster. Having achieved our objective, retreat was a simple matter, as was regaining the rendezvous. The rest, you know.
Well, I guess it'll be interesting to see what Dad makes of all this.
It took less than 2 days to make the return journey. The wreck party hastened by its initial trip into the desert during daylight hours. When night fell, they were glad to rest up, dehydrated and overheated by the rigors of the day's march. After building a fire, they ate and then slept while a watch rotated, rising with the dawn the next morning to complete the trip back to the hidden redoubt. The last few hours, those spent scaling the winding road that stuttered in and out of existence around the side of the mountain, were in many ways the worst, as they found themselves making a journey upward in the blazing sun, the incline and the heat conspiring to draw any strength that was left from their calf and thigh muscles. Apart from the sheer hard slog of it, the journey had been uneventful. There had been no more giant worms to disturb their passage, no packs of wildcats luring them into a feeding frenzy trap, and certainly no other humans or muties such as Stickies who were traversing the vast wastes of dust-blown desert, either on foot or by wag. They had been completely alone, and this sense of desolation hadn't eased the journey, making them feel as though they were the only people left alive. By the time they had reached the small plateau of rock shelf that stood before the camouflaged entry to the redoubt, they felt as though this may actually be true. Doc, already partly delirious from the heat and the dehydration, was sure that this was so, and that those who accompanied him were mere shades, ghosts of those he had set off with, but who had perished along the way. They shuffled the last grueling steps toward the large sec doors set in the rock face.
Sec camera should have got us on the last turn. There should be a party waiting for us.
As they came within a few yards of the doors, they began to open, scrolling upward to reveal a party of Hellbenders, accompanied by Ryan and Mildred, and headed by Carell himself.
Weren't expecting you back so soon. Must have been a hell of a journey.
Gesturing to the rear of him, Papa Joe indicated that 2 of the party go forward to assist Doc, whose will to carry on had collapsed now that the doors were open. The old man was buckling at the knees, and Travis and Rudy rushed forward to support him, closely followed by Mildred. She checked his vital signs quickly before indicating to Travis with a nod that they transfer him to the med lab.
Dad, Damn, you old coot. You can't keep doing this at your age.
Not bad for someone breaching a third century, though, my dear doctor.
Yeah, not bad for a crazy man.
Travis and Rudy took Doc by the arms, and all four of them disappeared down the tunnel. Carell watched them go, then turned back to the rest of the wreck party.
You've done well. To be truthful, I didn't figure on the old man coming back with you. Shows guts. But all that counts for shit if you didn't get results.
Oh, we got results all right. Full details of the wags Baronel's sending out, some old tech stuff that the boys picked up. We got separated and they ended up taking an alternative route. And what's more, we've got ourselves an ally in the convoy.
Carell tried to stay impassive, but Ryan noticed that he stiffened at this last sentence, as though a raging torrent of conflicting emotions were running through his mind and body, and he was fighting to keep them under control. A vein on the side of his neck throbbed, causing an eyebrow to twitch, and the one-eyed man guessed that Carell's blood pressure had just shot out there past the bloated red sun.
Okay, we debrief in 45. You take a shower, eat and drink, then meet me in the office.
The Baron turned and walked back down the tunnel, leaving the rest of them standing in the hot desert sun.
Oh, shit. Doesn't sound like he's happy about that.
How can you tell?
If he wasn't pissed, he would have had us debrief without the option of showering and eating first. Guess he needs to cool off and get himself together before tackling this. It's unexpected, and Papa Joe doesn't like unexpected.
Not even when it's good.
Ryan pondered that as the wreck party wearily passed him on its way back down into the redoubt. If Carell was resistant to any changes in his plans, that could cause problems later when they had to go into combat. As Jack passed Ryan at the end of the line, still looking fit comparatively, his gaze met Ryan's.
Think what I do?
We'll talk about it later, in privacy.
Jack nodded and proceeded down the tunnel without looking back. Ryan was left alone, standing on the plateau in front of the sectors, the rest of the wreck party and the welcoming group having retreated. He stared out at the vast expanse of desert, stretching to where Charity lay beyond the horizon. It was going to be an interesting debriefing.